There we go. Okay, you all ready? Vayetze, Angels Rise and Fall is the title. So we've actually talked about angels before, and in particular, we've talked about the Rambam and the Ramban's approaches to angels. But we're not going to retread that because here it's not really relevant. Anybody remember what's the Rambam's position? What's his unique position about angels in Tanakh? Anybody remember? When angels show up in Tanakh, what does it mean? What's the first thing you can say for sure? Oh, this is getting a chalisha sadas. Nobody remembers?
I don't remember.
When the Rambam sees angels in the Chumash, he knows one thing is going on. Doesn't matter
it's
whether
a dream.
The angels. It's a dream. Doesn't matter whether it's at the beginning of the story. Doesn't matter whether it's the end of the story. It's always a dream. Okay, we dealt with that issue, and the Ramban vehemently disagrees. He says, "No, that's not true. People can see angels. Angels can show up as either virtual images, or they can dress up as humans. No problem with that." But the Rambam holds that there's always a dream. Over here, we're not going to have that dispute, because the dream that the angels that we're talking about tonight are, according to everybody, in a dream, because the Torah describes it as a dream. The Torah says, "Vayifka b'makom." Yaakov, as he's leaving, as he's fleeing from Be'er Sheva and making his way to Haran, it says, "Vayifga b'makom vayalan sham kiva shemesh vayikach me'avne makom vayasem erashutav vayishka b'makom ahu." He grabs some stones, he puts them down. It's time for him to take a nap. According to Rashi, he hasn't slept in 14 years, so he deserves it. So he lays down for a nap with these stones. Vayachalom, there's the operative word. He has a dream. And what does he see? V'hine sulam mutzav arza v'roshom magi hashamayim. V'hine malachei Elohim olim v'yordim bo. He sees a ladder, or according to the English over here, a stairway. It makes a difference. But he sees something going up to heaven with its head. Interesting. Its head reaches the shamayim, and it is set on the ground. And the malachei Elohim, right? Angels of God are going up and down. Okay, fine. V'hinei Hashem nitzav alav, v'yomar, ani Hashem Elokei Avraham, avicha, v'lehi Yitzchak, ha'aretz asher ata shochev aleha lecha etnena ulezarecha. Hashem is standing on it. Okay, Hashem is standing on it. And he says, "I'm Hashem." You should, you know, for the first time, Yaakov is having some kind of revelation. He's speaking to Hashem in a dream. Just for the record, what does this word mean, alav? Anybody want to take a stab at that? Ignore the English.
It's either on the ladder or on him.
Right. Good. So that's going to be an important point. In general, it's important because it's a problem of scope, right? Hashem nitzav alav. We don't know if it's talking about Yaakov or if it's talking about the ladder. And that's actually the subject of a dispute between the Rishonim. Don't think we're going to get too deep into it tonight, but the Rambam is going to have something to say. So first, before we continue, okay, just a general survey, all right? What's the significance of these angels? Somebody tell me. What are the angels supposed to be teaching us? What is Yaakov supposed to be seeing? Yaakov walks into your office. He says, "Doctor." He sits down on the couch. He says, "I had the following dream." You take out your notepad. You start talking. What do you say?
It's a message from Hashem.
Oh, Harebi. It's a message from Hashem. Good. That's easy. What's the message?
All dreams are some kind of message from Hashem.
Fine. But he's seeing a specific image here. He's seeing angels going up and down a ladder. What is he supposed to make of this? What does it mean?
I would think that it would be, it seems to me location-based. So it's a comment on the location, that something having to do with location has some connection to Shamayim. Shamayim maybe being some sort of a godliness kind of a concept.
Well, God's in the dream, so there's definitely godliness there.
Right, but what's the Shemayim? Right? I mean, to me, it seems
to
like
the
a
sky.
Location thing.
To the sky, he sees a ladder, which is, you know, firmly placed on the ground, and the top of it is going all the way up to Shemayim, as far as the eye can see. And there are angels going up and down, and then all the way at the top, presumably, assuming for now, is Hashem, or some kind of representation of Hashem in the dream, who's all the way at the top of the ladder, or not, or maybe it's on top of him. We're not sure.
Well, for those of us who don't remember the Rashi, it's right in front of us.
Good. So we'll start with Rashi. But I'm just curious. Does anybody have anything they want to say without the help of Rashi? Okay, fine. So we'll start with Rashi. So Rashi tells us, Olim v'yordim, Olim t'chila v'charkach yordim. Rashi says, what's going on over here? Angels, where do angels come from? Do they come from the earth? No, they're supposed to start from Shamayim, right? It should be yordim v'olim, if anything. So why does it start with olim and then yordim? So he says, Malachim shalivu ba'aretz ein yotzim chutzalaretz v'alul arakia v'yardu malachei chutzalaretz l'avoto. The answer is that there are different classes of angels, and there's a different class per place. So the place where he has been until now was Canaan, was Eretz Israel. That was a special place, filled with much more godliness than other places, apparently. And therefore, the angels that come, that, you know, the brand of angels that we have in Israel, so they cannot go to Chutz La'aretz. They can't accompany him. They can't escort him anymore. So when he's leaving Canaan, the angels that are with him go up. They go up the ladder to return to Shemayim. And the angels that are going to escort him in Chutz La'aretz, they come down the ladder. That's how Rashi understands this. By the way, this is, of course, bookended by the end of the parasha, because what happens at the end of the parasha? Remember, it's the end of the parasha. Perfectly bookended. The very end of the parasha, the last few psukim, we can look it up, tells a familiar, has a familiar terminology. After he fights with Lavan, Yaakov leaves Lavan, and what happens? He encounters, or they encounter him, is Malach Elohim. And he says, okay, and he calls this place Machanaim, because he saw a machane of angels. So he sees angels that are coming. So what's the simplest explanation over here? What does Rashi say? He sees angels at the beginning of the parasha, he sees angels at the end of the parasha. What's going on at the end of the parasha? These are the angels of Eretz Israel that are returning when he returns to Eretz Canaan, right? These are the other angels, the ones that went up. Now they come back down to come meet him.
I have a question. Where Yaakov is having this dream, was he not in Eretz Israel?
He was leaving Eretz Israel. He was on his way out.
But at that moment, he was still there. So the angels of Eretz Israel should have been with him, I would imagine.
This is in a dream, so I guess the idea is, Yaakov, you should realize that you're leaving Eretz Israel now, so these angels are going to leave you, and I'm going to replace them with other angels. It may not be that he was seeing what was actually happening, but this was a foreshadowing of what's going to happen. We know that at this point, according to the Chazal, he was actually at the Harabayit, right? That's where he was. Okay. Just so you know, Nitzav Alav, Rashi comments, the Shamro. Which is interesting. Rashi seems to be understanding that Alav over here is Yaakov, that Hashem was standing on Yaakov and he was protecting him from the angels, which if we were giving a shir in Rashi, we would really dig into why he needs to be protected from angels, but we're not going to talk about that right now. Okay, let's move on. So according to Rashi, the message of the angels is, Yaakov, you're now leaving Eretz Canaan. You had a special escort of angels here. But now they're leaving, and they're going to be replaced with other angels in Chutz La'aretz. What would be the significance of that? Again, we could talk about that in Rashi. But let's move on to the Rambam. Now, the Rambam mentions this ladder of Yaakov in at least four places. Three of them are in the Moreh Nevuchim, and one of them in the Mishneh Torah. Okay? The first place that he mentions it in the Mishneh Torah, chronologically in the Mishneh Torah, is actually in his introduction. And he doesn't give anything away about the content.
You mean Moreh Nevuchim, not his Mishneh Torah?
Yeah, introduction to Moreh Nevuchim, sorry. His introduction to Moreh Nevuchim, and he doesn't give anything away about the meaning of the dream, but he does give us an insight into how to read it. So the Rambam over here is giving a general introduction to stories in Chumash, and especially dreams and prophecies. And he says we should know that the figures employed by prophets are of two kinds. There are two kinds of mishalim in Tanakh. First, there's the kind where every word which occurs in the simile represents a certain idea. And then secondly, where the simile as a whole represents a general idea, but has a great many points which have no reference whatever to that idea. They're simply required to give it to the simile its proper form and order, or better, to conceal the idea. The simile is therefore continued as far as necessary according to its literal sense. Consider this well. Okay, so in a nutshell, what the Rambam has said over here, is that there are two ways to read Mishalim and Tanakh. Sometimes the story that's being told is what we would call omnisignificant, which means that every single detail in the story is representative of some message. In other words, every single detail has meaning and should be read as such. And then there are other stories where, you know, somebody wants to tell a story. They have a particular point they want to get across, but you can't get across the point without putting it, couching it in a story. And so the details of the story are not really important so much as the general message of the story itself. So you may find all kinds of details in the story that are simply there in order to make it interesting, or at least to make it make sense, right? We all remember, you know, learning in English class, you read a poem or you read a story and the teacher says, well, what do you think the author is trying to convey by this? And sometimes the answer is, yes, well, you know, the color is significant or the objects are significant. And sometimes the answer is, well, they wanted to tell a good story and they had a message, but the contents of the story are not important to the message. It's just, they're just there by happenstance. So the question is, what kind of story is the one about the latter? The Rambam says, well, that one is the first kind. An example of the first class of prophetic figures is to be found in Genesis. And he says, Hasulam Mutzav Arta Barochem Magi HaShamayma. He says the word ladder refers to one idea. Set up on the earth, Mutzav Arta is another. Roshem Magi HaShamayma is another idea. The angels are another idea. The fact that they're going up is another idea. The fact that they're going down is another idea. And the fact that Hashem is Nitzav Alav is yet a seventh idea. Every single one of these objects in the story needs to be interpreted on its own. Not that they don't connect to each other, but each one has meaning. They each add, what he says is, a fresh element into the idea represented by the figure. Okay, very good. But the Rambam doesn't actually tell us what these elements are. He just says that that's how the story should be read. So let's see how he actually reads the story. So by far the most important and elaborate place where he talks about it is in the first section of Mor Nevuchim in the 15th chapter. And that's what we're looking at over here. And he actually starts out talking about a different word in the Pasuk. He's talking about the word Nitzav. Okay? And he's talking about the difference between Nitzav and Yashav. It says the word Nitzav is different from the word Yashav. Even though they have two different roots, but the meaning is identical. So let's see what he says. The verb has several meanings. In some instances, it signifies to stand or to place oneself, as in, and his sister stood afar off. Anybody know what this is? What's this pasuk?
It's Miriam.
That's Miriam. That's right. Miriam stood far off, watching Moshe in the river. That's right. Then you have the kings of the earth set themselves. Okay, this is a pasuk in Tehillim. Okay. And then you have, they came out and stood in Bamidbar, Nitzavim. And then finally, you have another case where, for example, it's not a person or a body, but rather thy word is established in heaven, right? Dvarcha Nitzav Bashamayim, I think. Anyways, so what the Rama says is that in those cases, it doesn't just simply mean to stand or to place yourself, but rather it denotes continuance and permanence, nitzchiut. Okay, to be nitzav is to stand fast, to say, I'm staying here and I'm not moving, to remain forever. And now he says, whenever this term is applied to God, it obviously doesn't mean to stand or to place, because God doesn't exist in space, or at least, you know, he doesn't exist only in space. So it must be understood in the latter sense, as in our pasuk, Vashem nitzav alav, that Hashem appeared as eternal and everlasting upon it, namely upon the ladder, the upper end of which appeared to Rishna, while the lower end touched the earth. So in other words, Hashem is at the top of the ladder, and the word Nitzav here means that Hashem is eternally and everlastingly on top of the ladder. Okay, what does the ladder represent? This ladder, and this is very unique, by the way, the Rambam's interpretation here is very unique. This ladder All may climb who wish to do so. Now, what's the point of climbing it, if he's right? What's the point of climbing this ladder? What's the idea of climbing the ladder?
To reach Hashem.
To reach Hashem, exactly, Marilyn. And they must ultimately attain to a knowledge of him who is above the summit of the ladder, because he remains upon it permanently. It must be well understood that the term upon it is employed by me in harmony with this metaphor. Now, who are the ones going up and down the ladder? Now, in the story, or in the dream, who are the ones going up and down the ladder?
The angels.
Angels, right? But everything in the story is meant to be a representative of something else. So the angels are not actually angels as in, you know, beings with wings and, you know, halos, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, whatever it is that they look like. But rather, according to the Rambam, angels of God, Malachi Elohim, who were going up represent the prophets, meaning they represent men. Now he goes further and he says, by the way, the term angel was applied to prophets. It clearly be seen in the following passages. He sent an angel, and an angel of the Lord came up from Gilgal to Bochim. In all these places, it's actually talking about humans, prophets that are being sent, but are sometimes called Malachi Elohim, which are messengers of God. How suggestive, too, is the expression ascending and descending on it? The ascent is mentioned before the descent. You notice he noticed the same thing that Rashi noticed, that it says Olim v'yordim instead of yordim v'olim. Why is that? Inasmuch as the ascending and arriving at a certain height of the ladder precedes the descending, the application of the knowledge acquired in the ascent for the training and instruction of mankind. Okay. According to the Rambam, what is the message of these angels? First of all, they represent prophets. Why is Yaakov being shown this image? So the image is connoting the idea that man has the ability to climb this ladder and approach God. And then what happens when he gets there? He goes back down. And why would he go back down? And what does it mean to go back down? What does the Rambam say it means? It means to take the knowledge that you acquired while you were next to God, right? This prophecy, this wisdom, this chokhmah or Torah in some cases, and bring it back down to the people. That's why these angels, who are stand-ins for prophets, are going up to God and coming back down. This application is termed descent in accordance with our explanation of the term Yarad, which he explains in other places. Now, he says, now this was all an aside to explain the word nitzav. So getting back to it, he says, the phrase stood upon it indicates the permanence and constancy of God and does not imply the idea of physical position. Hashem is not standing anywhere. He is simply located in a spiritual sense at the top of the ladder, and you can achieve wisdom and oneness with God by traveling up that ladder, which is obviously a metaphor. Okay? So according to the Rambam, this was the message of this dream. Anybody ever heard of this before? I'm going to wager no. I'm going to guess no. This is a very unique interpretation of the of this dream, that the angels aren't actually angels, but that they're actually men or women who are prophets who are approaching God and then bringing down the wisdom with them. Now, what's interesting is not only unique amongst the Rishonim, it's also unique amongst the Rambam, because the Rambam talks about this dream in two other places, and he gives other interpretations. So, for example, in another place, go ahead.
Can I put my two cents in for a moment? There's something that's really bothering me. The last line there, and that what we just read from the Rambam, Nitzav and Amad are identical in its figurative signification. To my understanding, every word in the Torah is specific and chosen for a specific reason. And to say that the two words are identical troubles me a bit.
The Rambam kind of lived before a time when Mefarshim were interested in untangling synonyms, although that is part of what he does in the Mor Nebuchim. I am not sure if he does untangle Nitzav and Amad in other places. I assume that he does. I assume that he does. All he's saying over here is that whenever it says Nitzav and Amad about Hashem, it's not talking about Hashem actually physically standing or sitting for that matter, but it connotes a constancy, the fact that he remains there and is steadfast over there. That seems to be what he means, but you're right. I mean, even in Hebrew, Nitzav and Omed are not used interchangeably. They definitely have different meanings. Okay, so elsewhere in the Morne Nevuchim, the Rambam is actually talking about a totally different topic. He's talking about metaphysical ideas. He's actually talking about the number four and how many times and how many different places the number four shows up. Like there are four elements and there are four, they counted four senses, and four shows up a lot. And so he says, as to the number four, it is strange and demands our attention. And he says in the Midrash Tanhuma, the following passage occurs. He says, how many steps were in Jacob's ladder? Four. There are four steps. The question refers to the verse, and behold, the ladder set upon the earth. That's Sulam Utavarta. And in all the Midrashim, it is stated that there were four hosts of angels, that because there are four steps in the ladder, there are four angels there, four types. This statement is frequently repeated, although he notes that in some places it's actually seven and not four. But all readings in the Midrashim unanimously express that the angels whom Jacob saw ascending the ladder and descending were only four. Two of them were going up and two were coming down. These four angels, the two that went up and the two that came down, occupied one step of the ladder, standing in one line. Hence, it has been inferred that the breadth of the ladder in this vision was four-thirds of the world, for the breadth of an angel in prophetic vision is equal to one-third of the world. Okay. We're not going to go too deep into this because I don't know what it means. But the Rambam over here is definitely saying that the imagery that Yaakov is given with the angels is actually a much more metaphysical imagery. He's being taught some scientific metaphysical idea about the universe that is using the angels as an aid to somehow measure the largeness or something like that about the universe. It's worth noting that the Rambam in the same book gives two completely different readings of this dream. And he's not done. In his Mishneh Torah, which is, I consider, you know, his magnum opus, his main work, the one that he pushed the hardest. It's his halachic work. Over here, he gives a totally different interpretation. In his Hilchot Yisodei HaTorah, which is the first section of the Mishneh Torah, the first book in it, he says, the matters concerning which a prophet is informed by vision of prophecy are imparted to him allegorically, but the interpretation thereof is engraved upon his heart simultaneously with the vision. So whenever a Navi gets a nevuah, he gets the actual imagery, but he gets the meaning along with it. He always gets the meaning along with it. So he doesn't have any sfeikot. It's interesting because there are many Nevi'im who didn't understand their nevuah, right? Zechariah, actually. Let's see, is that what he mentions over here? Let's see what he says. So he says, for example, when Yaakov sees the Malachi Elohim Olim V'Yordim Bo, it was a parable, the interpretation of which is the rise and fall of kingdoms. Okay, the Rambam writes in his Mishneh Torah that the proper interpretation of this dream is that the angels going up and the angels going down represent different kingdoms throughout history that go up and go down. Is anybody familiar with this idea?
Not history, throughout the future.
Well, yeah, the future
yeah,
history.
Yeah, there is the right. Future, yeah.
Yeah. Has anybody heard this before?
From the Rambam.
So I think this is my earliest memory of what this dream meant. This is what I was taught in school, I guess, or something. That they represented different kufot, different kingdoms. It's interesting that Rashi is not the one who says this, but there is a midrash that says this. And in fact, we're going to see that the Ramban also says it. But it's striking that the Rambam, this is what he chooses to bring in his Mishneh Torah.
Doesn't this conflict with what he said earlier about the angels being prophets?
Well, it's definitely not the same. You're right. It's definitely not the same. So he says, he mentions, by the way, that this is not the only place where these four kingdoms are metaphorized in a dream or in a prophecy. They are explicitly metaphorized as the living creatures which Yechezkel saw, mm-hmm. or the seething pot and the Amenorah, et cetera, et cetera. And we know that Daniel also saw dreams that referenced mm-hmm. the kingdoms. And he says, but the rest of the prophets, some of them relate the parable and his interpretation as these. Others relate the interpretation alone. And still others relate the parable only without the interpretation as parts of the prophecies of Ezekiel and Zechariah. But all of them are prophesying in parables and metaphors. Everybody gets a nevuah in a parable or a metaphor, with the exception maybe of Moshe. I just think it's interesting what the Rambam wrote at the beginning of this halacha, that the prophet always gets the interpretation along with it. Because actually, as we're coming up on Hanukkah, right, we're going to read the Haftorah, and Hanukkah is from Zechariah, from Sefer Zechariah, where he has a dream about these bowls and oil and menorot and all that stuff. That's why we read on Hanukkah. And in that perek, in Navi, he tells the angel who's giving him this imagery that he has no idea what it means. He can't understand it. So how the Rambam deals with that, I'm not sure. But what interests us right now is that we have three different interpretations of this midrash. In one place, of this dream rather, in one place, the primary place, I think, he explains that these angels actually represent prophets who are going up and down the ladder to get wisdom from God and bring it back down. In another place, he says that the angels represent some kind of metaphysical idea that Yaakov is being taught about the universe. And then in yet a third place, he says, no, they just represent the kingdoms that are going to reign in the world throughout the future. What do you do with all this? Any suggestions what we can do to reconcile all of this? What are our options?
Is it possible that each of the four prophets he refers to is aligned with one of the kingdoms that he's referring to?
So you want to combine the Mishneh Torah interpretation with the prophets, meaning why do they have multiple malachim? It must be mean that it's referring to multiple prophets. If it's referring to multiple prophets, maybe it's somehow related to the kingdoms. It could be reasonable.
But I want to ask, where did the number four come into it at all? It's not in the Chumash.
No, it's not in the Chumash. He just says that the Midrashim all say that there were four angels and four rungs in the ladder. It's not in the Chumash.
So this is like an extrapolation of a ladder to the Midrash and the Midrash to something, to another Midrash and another Midrash.
The Rambam is explaining the Midrash in that case. He's explaining what the Midrash is getting at. Why does the Midrash pick four? And he explains why it picks four.
But why would the Midrash pick four? That's my question. I get very confused with what the Midrashim say sometimes.
So take a look at this Mor Nevuchim. If you can understand it, then you should explain it to me. But the Rambam is saying four is a particular number that's being chosen over there for a particular reason. It has to do with the nature of the number four in the universe. I don't understand. I don't claim to understand it.
Okay.
So that's a perfectly reasonable, reconciliation. I was thinking of another reconciliation. The Rambam writes elsewhere that Hashem's hashkacha pratit, Hashem's divine providence on each person is variable. It varies. Not everybody receives the same amount of hashkacha pratit. And it all depends on your connection, your attachment to God. And who has a greater attachment to God? Prophets. Rambam says, The journey to becoming a prophet is a journey of being more attached to God. And when you're more attached to God, he's more attached to you. It's a quid pro quo type of thing. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean? That means those traveling up the ladder are traveling towards a deeper connection to Hashem. And in that sense, they're also traveling towards becoming like angels who are close to God. That's the connection between the prophet and the angel. In the same sense, the angels that are going up and down, right? The angels that are going up and down the ladder, according to the third interpretation of the Mishneh Torah, these kingdoms are actually part of the divine scheme, right? They're part of Hashem's plan for the universe, these four kingdoms. They weren't happenstance. They weren't a mistake. Hashem put them there on purpose. And so they're actually carrying out Hashem's desires in the world. And so in that sense, they're also like the prophets in the sense that they're messengers. In all of these cases, the angels going up and down the ladder are just messengers of God. They're Hashem's way of handling the world. That's what makes them Malachi Elohim. So whether the Malachi Elohim are men and women who are prophets carrying out God's will, or whether they're these kingdoms that according to the Rambam are carrying out God's will, or whether they're actual angels who are carrying out God's will, in that sense, they're all the same. And Malachi Elohim ultimately just means messengers of God. So it could actually absorb all the interpretations of the Rambam. Is it a stretch? Maybe. I don't know. So that's how the Rambam understands it. What about the Ramban, Nachmanides? So we always want to pit them against each other. It's not so much pitting them against each other in this case. They just have different interpretations. So we'll focus on really just the first part of the Ramban, because the second part actually is the same as the Rambam's Mishneh Torah interpretation. But the Ramban's interpretation of this dream, his primary one, is as follows. He says, the dream teaches, Kikol ha-naseh ba'aretz nasa'a yidei malachim, va'kol b'gzirat elyon. Everything that happens on the earth is done by angels, and everything is ordered by God. Ki malachi Elohim asher shalach Hashem lehitalech ba'aretz, lo yasu ktana u'gdola ad shuvam lehitatev al adon kol ha'aretz. The angels that he sends don't do anything unless they were sent directly by Hashem. So they come down, they do what they're supposed to do, then they return to God to receive more instructions and to also inform Hashem, as if he needs to be informed. It's only ki'ilu, about what happened. So the angels, they come down to the earth, they do what they're supposed to do, they pay attention, they gather information, and then they go back up and they tell Hashem what's going on. This actually, I think, can be clearly seen in the story of the Malachim of Sodom, right? Hashem actually says, I'm going to go down and see what's going on in Sodom, and then I'll make a decision about what to do. And then what does he do? He sends angels. Which tells you that the way that Hashem, kivyachol, gets his information is by sending angels to gather the information. That's the, whether this, you know, is physically happening, it's the way that the Torah represents it. Now he continues and he says, "Vehereihu ki hu yitbarach nitzav al asulam." So what's the important message here? That even though there are these angels going up and down, at the very top of the ladder, according to the Ramban, Alav is the top of the ladder. Who's at the top of the ladder? Hashem. And what does he do? Mavticho liyakov behavtacha gdola lihodia shehu lo yihiya biyad hamalachim. Aval yechelek Hashem v'hiya imo tamid. Hashem is telling Yaakov that he will not be affected by the angels. He's not under their control. He is only under the direct control of Hashem. He's on that highest level where he gets full divine providence. Nothing can touch him without Hashem. Kamo shamar, v'hine anochi imcha u'shmarticha b'chol asher tilech. And that's what he tells Yaakov. He says, you're going to go, and I will be with you, and I will watch you everywhere you go. In other places, Hashem tells other tzaddikim, I'm going to send an angel to take care of you. But Yaakov, he says, I'm going to take care of you personally. So it's as if Hashem is showing him this image of the normal, natural state of the world where angels go up and down performing Hashem's tasks and giving him the information. And Yaakov is not subject to that natural order. He is outside of that natural order. He will be tended to by Hashem and Hashem alone.
Does this conflict at all with a story that comes later of Yaakov's wrestling with the angel, and the angel actually causes Yaakov to limp, which means he's had some control on him and he struggles with him?
Yeah, that's interesting. I think, well, first of all, keep in mind, according to the Rambam, that was a dream. Obviously, because an angel.
Yes,
but
we're talking about the Ramban now, yes.
Right. I think the purpose, you're right. But I think the purpose of that story is that the angel, well, actually, okay, interesting point. So the truth is that according to the Ramban, the angel there doesn't fight with Yaakov. He at least doesn't start out fighting with Yaakov. He actually tries to entice Yaakov, tries to bring him over to the dark side. And only when he sees that doesn't work, he attacks him. But actually, that is a classic answer to this question, because how does that story end? Yaakov defeats the angel, and then gets a new name, Kisarita Elohim Vanashim Batuchal. You struggled with angels and you defeated them, meaning Yaakov is not under the control of angels. And when they try to control them, control him, he defeats them.
It makes sense.
But the angels are all shlichim of Hashem.
So that's true. That's true, except that in that story, the angel there is a representative of Esav. It's according to the Ramban, it's a little more complicated than just saying angels are all shlichim of Hashem. Because according to Ramban, every nation has their own angel. And they really do. According to Ramban, every nation has their own angel, and every land, every part of the world has an angel assigned to it that's in control of that land. And it's subservient to Hashem. Hashem tells it what to do or is in control of it. But to a certain degree, they have some kind of, I guess, some kind of autonomy, except for here in Eretz Israel and Bnei Israel. And Yaakov is being told exactly that message. Everybody else in the world is under the direct control of angels who are under my control, but direct control of the angels. But you, Yaakov, you are not under the control of the angels at all. You're under my direct control. That's what he's being told by this story, by this dream. Now the Ramban, in the next paragraph, he does quote the Midrash in Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer that says that this is like, that this whole story is actually like the Brit Ben HaBetarim of Avram. Because in the Brit Ben HaBetarim of Avram, if you remember, he was given also a prophecy of what's going to happen in the future. He was told specifically about what's going to happen to his descendant when they get enslaved. He doesn't get told in Egypt, but he's told that they're going to be enslaved. And he's also told, according to one interpretation, about other enslavements, not only Mitzrayim. And so Yaakov is getting a parallel vision over here. According to the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, he's being told about the four kingdoms that are going to enslave the world, and by extension, Bnei Israel, just like what the Rambam says. But we've seen basically here, we saw the interpretation of Rashi. Just to recap, the interpretation of Rashi is that these are two classes of angels. They're the Eretz Yisrael angels and the Chutz La'aretz angels. Then we saw that the Rambam has at least three different interpretations. His main interpretation appears to be that the angels represent prophets who go up and down the ladder, bringing God's wisdom and connection to God to the rest of the people on earth. Then another metaphysical interpretation, which personally I don't understand, and Marilyn's going to get back to us about. Mm-hmm. And then the Rambam and the Ramban both quote this Midrash from Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer that the angels represent the four kingdoms. But then the Ramban's own preferred interpretation is that these angels represent Hashem's way of conducting affairs on earth, which Yaakov is not subject to. He is outside of that area. Avram, by the way, if you remember, was told the same thing. Say me'ad stiginot shelcha. Avram looked up at the stars and he saw what his fate was going to be. And Hashem said, no, that's not going to determine your fate. You're not under the control of anybody, only me. So those are two different ways, or at least two, many different ways, but at least two different ways of the Rambam and the Ramban of looking at this, the dream, and the different ways of interpreting it. Shakoch, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming out tonight.
Thank you very much. Good night all.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good night. Shabbat shalom.